Welcome to the Teen Life Podcast, where we believe that teenagers are not a problem to be solved, but we're here to help you equip teenagers through the power of connection. My name is Chris Roby, and once again, across from me is Carly Duke.
Hello. We don't have friends today, Chris.
No, we don't. No, no. If you listen to our last episode, we had some friends on the podcast to celebrate our 100th episode, and so we are into 101 now, into our hundreds, which I guess I don't know what that is in podcast years.
Are we getting old?
Pretty old, yeah. But also super privileged that we are able to continue to do this and create content and to talk through issues that are sometimes hard to talk about. And to be honest with you, a little bit laced with, I guess, political, I don't know the best way to put it, but this topic of gun violence is a hard one to talk to, as some of ours are, and we want to always maintain as we go through this. We really want to stick to the facts. And our job is to process this for our helpers, our parents, our teachers, our coaches, our counselors who work directly with teenagers with issues that directly affect teenagers. And gun violence, unfortunately, is one of those that we never thought we'd have to be talking about as much as we have. But just here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area this week, the week of this recording, had another incident of a student dying by gun violence right in front of their school. And so, Carly, so this happened in DFW. Why does this matter for anyone listening? I mean, anyone not on that campus, why do you think this even matters?
I mean, I think it's something that is scary and a reality that our kids are having to face. I think the question, and we'll get into it a little bit even with some stats, but the fact that we have to question the safety of our kids when they step on a school campus is worrisome. Mm-hmm. And I think it plays into mental health. It plays into bullying. It plays into a lot of different things. And gun violence is not just mass shootings, and we know that. It also includes suicide and other incidences. But in 2020, firearms became the leading cause of death for kids ages 19 and below.
Wow.
Which is just crazy to me. And then in 2022, so this was just last year, in the first 6 months, there were over 300 mass shootings across the U.S.
My goodness.
And so for those of us living in Texas, that included Robb Elementary in Uvalde. And so this happens close. And like you said, Chris, Lamar High School happening, I mean, that's in my backyard. Less than 10 minutes away from that school. And so it's scary that we're having to think about that when we take our kids to school. But I think where it matters for anyone listening, whether you live in the DFW area or not, is that gun violence causes physical harm, but it also causes mental and emotional harm. And because our students have social media, they are seeing it whether or not it happens in their backyard or at their school.
Yeah, if you've ever been around a child, a teenager who has been around gun violence, who has witnessed it, it's been a part of their experience. I don't want to say something's different, but you can tell that robbed them of something in their childhood. Their innocence is lost, and they realize it causes the guard to be up, obviously, but it's a traumatic event to have witnessed that. And we'll talk about this here in a little bit as we go along, but you know, just that secondhand, either hearing about it or seeing, you see instances of gun violence on social media or some live streams, and it just gets out there, and it's something that kids see, and when it comes off the movie screen and becomes more real, so much so that it's the leading cause of death among children ages 19 and below. You know, this is something that we have to talk about, whether or not you are very pro Second Amendment or very against it or whatever, you know, you're for gun control or mental health as being, I think everyone can agree that that gun violence is one of those things that, you know, we want to minimize and bring down, and to not make that the leading cause of death among children ages 19 and below. And so that's the reason that we're talking about this, because at least for a while, this is going to be a persistent deal in our society, especially in America. And so, it's important that we talk about this for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And to give another stat, by 2021, suicide deaths by firearm were accounted for nearly half of all suicides among children and teenagers. But so, like I said, not just mass shootings, which I think is where this conversation came out of, but suicide is also a huge issue. And the fact that nearly half are happening because of gun violence, that's scary. But the teens or the kids who are most at risk are children of color. So gun violence disproportionately affects them, particularly Black students. And also men, are young men. So male youth are more than four times more likely than females to die by a firearm. Mm-hmm. And so that's just something to keep in mind, that especially our teenage boys are more at risk. But like I said, it affects our kids not only physically, but exposure to gun violence can lead to PTSD, can lead to anxiety. As you're talking about, Chris, the survivors of firearm-related injuries have just this increased risk of mental health conditions, substance abuse disorders. I even saw research that says it leads to challenges at school. Mm-hmm. So increased absences, trouble concentrating, which I get. If you don't feel safe at school, then why are you going to show up? Mm-hmm. Or how are you going to focus? And so I think it's something to talk about. Once again, kind of towards the end, we'll talk about what we feel like are some things that we can do. But research has shown that access to firearms, particularly in the home, is a huge risk factor for suicide deaths among kids and teens. And Chris, we've talked about this, I feel like, a lot, and maybe even in our suicide episode, but this stat I saw said that nearly half of suicide attempts occur within 10 minutes of the current suicide thought. So that idea that if they, yes, it's an impulse, and if they have access to a firearm, especially in their home, and can get to it quickly, that's where the danger comes in.
Well, and adolescence is a time for impulsivity, so to speak, right? It's part of the wiring during that time where the emotions aren't always in check, and there are responses and outbursts, and it's part of those normal teen years. And some kids are more emotionally dysregulated, depending on their situation. And so emotional dysregulation and a deadly weapon, whether it's a gun, a knife, a vehicle, any of those kinds of things are just a really bad mix within the first 10 minutes of that impulse, right? And so it's a big part of the conversation, and I really encourage you to go back and listen to our episodes on suicide, where we talk about more specifically the gun with suicide as kind of being the, for lack of a better term, the most successful instrument of suicide. I mean, it's final. And so we'll talk about this more as we go along, but any kind of impulse, any kind of just dysregulation that's happening and a deadly weapon together are just a horrible recipe.
Right. So let's talk about mass shootings, though, and school shootings, because while this is a smaller percentage, like I said at the beginning, it can cause some extreme mental health consequences and distress, because if our students are hearing about them, whether or not it's in their community, can have negative impacts.
Right.
And so research has found that youth antidepressant use, suicide risk is increased in communities with exposures to school shootings. And then it also said that prior to the pandemic, so this is even before 2022 when there were so many mass shootings, but found that the majority of teenagers and their parents felt at least somewhat worried that a school shooting may occur at their school. So like I said, like just the mental toll that that takes on parents, on families, but even on our teenagers, that they walk into school at least somewhere in the back of their mind worried that something could happen to them while they're there.
Yeah. How do you function?
Yeah, exactly.
Or how do you function at your actual capacity? That is something, and I think even as a parent, you know, dropping your kid off of school. And I mean, just yesterday, I dropped my kids off at school, and I was swinging around to leave the neighborhood and just saw this guy sitting there staring at the school. And just, you know, I'm sure it was benign. I'm sure he was watching his kids walk off, but I looked around a couple times and kind of had my eye on him, you know, and, you know, that wouldn't have happened. That would not have been an impulse for me as a parent before all this right. would have happened.
I also think it's worth mentioning, and I'm going to say this knowing I don't have the answer for it either, but I think sometimes the school's answer is to do these active shooter drills mm-hmm. and to prepare kids. But research actually suggests that these drills have a negative psychological impact on the kids who are participating in them.
Absolutely.
Because it does put them more on edge. And so this knowledge leads to fear, it leads to anxiety. And like I said, I think the big question that everyone's asking, and that I don't know, Chris, if we're going to have a firm answer, but hopefully we can give some insight, is like, what can we do? Mm-hmm. Like, what do we do about this to help our teenagers feel safe?
Well, I think back to my parents, you know, who were baby boomers who grew up in the Cold War. You know, they, and anyone who grew up in the 60s or 70s or even late 50s will talk about basically, what is it? Basically bombing drills, basically, you know, you get under your desk and mm-hmm. it's all preparing for when Russia bombs us, or, you know, and, you know, we grew up after the Cold War and we didn't have those kind of drills, right? That was a foreign thing. I never knew that kind of fear of like, we could be wiped out at any point. But now, matter of fact, I think it was yesterday, the day before, my two sons were sharing shelter in place drills that they were doing, you know, mm-hmm. And I think even my youngest one asked, well, where did you hide? And all part of, and they didn't really talk about it with a lot of fear. And I don't know if they could fully understand, especially the younger ones, what this really means, gratefully. But sure. the fact that this is now our kids' reality, and it probably will be for a very long time, until these statistics start to come down, these news stories start to go away, is really, really, right. Really, really sad. But I do think talking about what are some things that we can do, you know, we're not going to stop gun violence with this podcast. We would release a lot more if we could. but I think one of the things we really have to have a conversation around, with so many guns in our country, and that's not a political statement, that's a reality. There's lots of guns in the United States, is having conversations around gun safety and storage. And that impulsive behaviors are going to happen. That's part of the human experience. But if we can do our part as responsible gun owners, or have that conversation to where, you know, I know where my guns are and I know that my kids can't get to them, mm-hmm. Would prevent a lot of this, where a teenager who might be having a really, really bad day and even making a threat doesn't have a way to pull it off. And that's how gun violence stops.
Sure. Yeah. So kind of like you mentioned, but making sure firearms are locked, they're mm-hmm. unloaded, stored separate from your ammo. Mm-hmm. If you have a gun safe or can get a gun safe where they're locked away, where the teenagers don't have access to it, they don't have the code, that's even better. Mm-hmm. I'll also say, I told Chris, I didn't want to get into all the laws because there are a lot of even things that people are proposing that we do for gun laws. I don't want to get into that in this podcast. But do your research. Learn about how, like, what is being proposed by the leaders in my community, in my state, and mm-hmm. how will they affect schools and students. Mm-hmm. And just make sure that you are educated on that, that you're advocating for that if you feel strongly about that. And even around the topic of gun safety, make sure you're having conversations with your kids about gun safety. Mm-hmm. Of if they find a gun somewhere, even if you don't have one in your home, if they're at a friend's house and a friend's parent has a gun, like especially I think for our younger teenagers, we need to be having those conversations early about what that looks like and how they can do that safely and make sure that their friends are safe as well.
Also too, them knowing like, hey, what if your friend brings a gun to school mm-hmm. and shows it to you just because they're showing off? Like, what do you do there? You know, like,
yeah,
you don't want to be a snitch. But also, you know, that's a life and death thing right there. And so there's certain things where it's probably okay to bring someone in to help out with that situation. But, you know, just, you know, gun, if you come across a gun, no matter what do you do that? What do you do with that? Mm-hmm. I think also just encouraging school staff members to, and I feel like teachers are asked to do so much these days, and to not only be an educator, but to be a psychologist, and to all these different things. But, you know, encouraging and equipping educators to know the signs and to know what to be listening for. Because that, you know, those things, you know, gun violence isn't because a kid's a bad kid and just is going to be a bad kid. It's mental health. It's impulse control. It's getting the kid the help they need when they need it. And so if you have a kid who's just really struggling and making threats and, or just maybe being super withdrawn when they aren't typically, is to be able to get that student the help they need, someone to talk to, because that's really like defusing a bomb in a lot of ways, where, you know, if a kid just is about to break and you can step in and be that listening ear, get them to the person who can do that, would be super helpful. And finally, too, we just encourage you to check in with your student after school shootings, even if it wasn't close to you.
Right.
I know this is something as our family we've really struggled with, especially after the Rob mass shooting event back last spring, is kind of how do you talk to your kids about this and expect them to step on school campuses and feel like they can learn and be safe, you know, because, you know, gun violence as a slice of the pie is really a small possibility, but it's still there. Mm-hmm. And that's just a scary thing to have to go into an environment like that and feel like you can. And so I'm just saying it is okay to talk about it with your kids because they probably will hear about it from their friends.
Yeah.
Anyways, but be willing to check in with your students after a school shooting, even if it's not right next to you.
Sure. And I'll post a link. Last spring, I did a short episode on how to talk to teenagers about school shootings. So I'll post that link too if you want to go back and listen to that, if you feel like you need to have a conversation with your teen. But it's always, we're always going to encourage you to connect, to have relationship, and to communicate with your teenagers. For the trend this week, Chris, I want to talk about location tracking because I think it's super helpful as a parent if you're wanting to keep tabs on your kids, but many kids are using Find My is what they call it on the iPhone. It used to be Find My Friends, but there are similar apps that track locations and they're using it with their friends. So it's almost like this other weird social media outlet that they're using. And we've talked in our Snapchat episode, we talked about Snap Maps.
There we go.
And man, I'm struggling with speaking today.
It's okay.
And Be Real is another app that you can post your precise location if you don't turn it off. And so location tracking is a thing that our students are doing often. So I just kind of wanted to talk about some pros and cons and maybe what we can be aware of.
This one totally got by me, Carly. When you put this on here, I was like, why are we talking about this? And I never had thought about this as being a socially divisive issue with teenagers. But as you talk through it, you're like, oh, wow, that'd be a real problem amongst a friend group for sure.
Yeah, definitely. So I will say the pros, it's helpful to know where your loved ones are if you're making plans with friends. I saw that a lot of people and kids share it, especially with significant others, with close friends, family members, parents, siblings. And I think also for our girls, there was a survey that found that 41% of women felt safer after sharing the location because they felt like someone could track them.
Right.
That if something happened, someone would know where they are. And there is safety in that, like making sure that trusted people are following you. And I also saw that like events are where people, if you're on vacation with someone, if you are going to, I don't know, even a concert and you're showing up separately, but meeting up, it's helpful to know where locations are.
Right.
But I will also say, if you are to get into the cons, it is easy to feel left out if you are following all of your friends' locations and you notice that all of them are at one location and you weren't invited. Ugh. You know, very quickly.
Yeah. I just can't imagine that. That added pressure to fit in. If you're really, if you're a teenager who's struggling to fit in and, you know, find your place, and you think you have this great friend group, and all of a sudden you're not with them, and you know it, and you have the data to show it.
Yep.
No doubt.
Yeah. And I just anecdotally, I heard a story this weekend about someone that a mom called another mom and said, "Hey, my son was looking on their location and saw that all of his friends were together at your house. Can I drop him off?" Mm. And as parents, I'm like, I don't even know what I would do in that situation. Like, or you having to navigate if your teenager comes to you and says, "All my friends are together and I'm not there." Mm-hmm. And you're having to navigate like, okay, how do I help them see it's okay, but also know like, man, you know, they don't even have to post anything about it for you to know that you're left mm-hmm. out. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's something that we need to be aware of that, like I said, I'm going to post an article. It was really fascinating. And this girl, I think that the main person it was written about is in their early 20s, but that they check it like a social media.
Wow.
Like throughout the day, they'll look at their friend list and see where people are. And her in particular, she was like, "I think I maybe follow like 20, 30 people." And then she really looked at it and counted. And it was in like the 90s, maybe. Wow. Of like how many people had her location. And so I think that's where it can be dangerous. If our teenagers start sharing the location freely, they might intend to just do it for a day or a weekend. But if you forget to remove those privileges, you could end up with a really long list of people who know exactly where you are at all times.
Well, I'd also say too, for any teenagers in a romantic relationship, could be a little bit dicey too. So, if there's not a lot of emotional maturity in that relationship where one is tracking the other's location and their movements, those kinds of things, like, why are you here? Why are you here?
Yeah.
Can be very invasive and very unhealthy. And so if you have a teenager who is, is dating someone, that might be a conversation to have of like, "Hey, you know, are y'all tracking each other on that? You know, are you, or, you know, and if so, how often does that come up where you are?" Because that's a tool for someone who maybe isn't very healthy to manipulate someone else.
Sure. And that's where I say, definitely have conversations with your kids, ask mm-hmm. who they're following, ask even when do you stop following them? So if mm-hmm. you follow them, you have to think about at some point, if you break up, you have to unfollow them, which is awkward. Mm-hmm. You have to, if you have a friendship that y'all get in a fight and you don't want them knowing where they are, like those are conversations you need to have, like make them think twice before they share their location. And maybe even ask them like, "Hey, can we look at your friends list together?" And then like, "Hey, let's look at our friends list and let's get it below 10 maybe." Mm-hmm. Of whatever that looks like. I think the max on the iPhone is 100 people. But okay. That is still frightening.
So many people.
100 people knowing where you are at all times is mm-hmm. not fun, especially for our teenagers. So I just wanted to bring this up so you know what to ask about, where to look, what conversations to be having with your kids so that we're keeping them safe as well. Okay, I have a quick Easter tip, Chris, because that is coming up this weekend. And that is, if you have older kids, I feel like sometimes if you celebrate Easter, those Easter traditions are like, what do I do with my teenagers? They think mm-hmm. it's hokey. We're not doing Easter bunny anymore. But if you still want to do an Easter egg hunt, do money. That's mm-hmm. my tip. Mm-hmm. Put $1 bills in the eggs so it's not super expensive, but then tell them, "Hey, there's a $20 bill hidden out there in one of the eggs," especially if you have multiple kids, and let them go after it. And one kid might walk away with $5 and one might walk away with $30. And it's a fun competition to get your kids into. But I also think it's easy to invite the older kids to do stuff for younger kids. If you have mm-hmm. younger kids in your family, have yeah. them be part of the planning, be part of the hiding. And then one last thing I'll mention, I saw this and it was fascinating. I was like, I wish I had known about this in high school, and it might be too late this year to do it with Easter coming up so quickly. But there are people who will get eggs and fill them and then charge families, and they'll go the morning of Easter and hide the eggs in their yard. And the families just pay them to do that. But then the family doesn't have to worry, especially if they have little kids and they don't want to mess with like who hid the eggs. Like they don't have to worry about doing the eggs, stuffing the eggs, or hiding the eggs, and your teenager could make a little money on the side.
What a great little cottage industry. I love it.
I know, exactly.
Yeah. Well, with that, that's a wrap on this podcast. We are so glad that you joined us for this important conversation. We really ask you to subscribe. If this is a podcast that you enjoy and has been beneficial to you, subscribe so it shows up in your feed every single week. We're every Tuesday drop, and so you can count on that year round. Follow us on social media. Text this episode to a friend if this is something that you feel like you have a friend, you guys want to have a conversation, and this would be a helpful part of that conversation. Text that to them. Review us on your favorite podcast app. Tell the world how much you love the Teen Life podcast. And with that, we'll see you next week.